John Wood worked for Microsoft for 9 years, helping grow the company's international profile. He resigned at 35 and founded Room to Read, which is widely regarded as one of the world's top nonprofit organizations. Now he examines the organization's next steps and its latest challenges, from managing expansion to raising money and a collapsing economy, to publishing books for children who literally have no books in their native language. He does so in his new book, Creating Room to Read. In it, he shares moving stories of the people Room to Read works to help: impoverished children whose schools and villages have been swept away by war or natural disaster, and girls whose education would otherwise be ignored. It's a great pleasure to welcome John Wood to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It is, again, a great pleasure. When you look at this story and the fact that your first book, Leaving Microsoft to Change the World, when you look at how Room to Read has grown and what you've been able to accomplish, has it amazed even you of what you have been able to accomplish in a relatively short period of time?
It's certainly heartening to be where Room to Read is today. I think that the luckiest thing that's happened to me is we've had just so many great people join on board to help turn Room to Read into a global movement. In the same way that it took, you know, masses of people to have big movements, whether it be against apartheid or to mobilize women to have the right to vote, I think more things get done when you create movements around them. So I think part of the reason we've reached these milestones of, you know, over 1,500 schools opened, 15,000 libraries open, is because we have lots of great people involved in a lot of places, including all over New England, where people are getting involved with Room to Read.
With that said, a lot of work still to do, and a lot of work still to be done, and a lot ahead, and which just speaks volumes about the magnitude of the overall problem.
Exactly. In the book, I talk about what I see as being one of the biggest catch-22s, or probably the cruelest irony in the world, is that literally hundreds of millions of kids live in places where their families and governments are too poor to educate them. As a headmaster in Nepal once said to me, he said, "We are too poor to educate our children, but until we get education, we are always going to remain poor." And that, to me, seems like the cruelest catch-22 in the world. No child should ever be told, in my opinion, you were born in the wrong place at the wrong time, and therefore you won't get educated. Those kids have lost the lottery of life, and Room to Read's goal is to say to them, you've not lost it. We're here for you. We're going to help you to get educated and hopefully work your way out of poverty.
When you left Microsoft to found Room to Read, what was it that you, what was the inspiration to say, okay, I have to make this life change?
For me, it was just the severe magnitude of the problem, that almost 800 million people in the world today lack basic literacy. And, you know, for your listeners, just think what that would be like if you, you know, you couldn't read a street sign or couldn't read a medicine bottle, a newspaper, a magazine. And when I set up that first library in Nepal in 1999, it felt great. It felt like one of the greatest moments of my life, because for a relatively small amount of money and for a relatively minor effort, we had helped 450 kids to have their first shot in life ever at gaining literacy and having a lifelong habit of reading. But the entrepreneur in me and the business person in me looked at that one library and said, this is actually rather pathetic, you know, when you look at this one library versus the size of the problem. And so I quit Microsoft with the view to, you know, one day replicate that one library dozens of times, hundreds of times, thousands of times. And my hero and my inspiration was Andrew Carnegie. I think sometimes we forget the legacy that Carnegie left for America, opening 2,500 libraries during the 19th century, that forever changed the notion that the poor would not get access to books and to information and to the chance to better themselves through education. And so when I looked at it as a developing world, I asked myself, who is the Andrew Carnegie of the developing world? Certainly somebody must have emulated Carnegie. Couldn't find an example, so I thought, well, maybe it's time to create a similar movement to Carnegie's for the poorest of the poor in the developing world.
What is fascinating is you look in the book about how you were able to grow this organization so quickly and so effectively, and now you have a very effective, large charity. And for you, how were you able to do it and be so effective while ultimately keeping the costs low because, quite frankly, there isn't much money to go around.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think keeping the costs low is one of the secrets to Room to Read success. In my book, I talk about the fact that with our girls' education program, for example, it literally is only $250 per girl per year to help a girl in a place like post-Khmer Rouge Cambodia or post-war Sri Lanka to get educated for a year. We can build a classroom library serving hundreds of children for as low as $5,000 because the local community co-invests in each project and a lot of the publishers give us books for free, so it holds the cost down. So in a certain sense, you know, if you look at the airline industry, you know, low costs, e.g. like Southwest Airlines, drives volume. And we take a similar approach at Room to Read. If we can keep our costs low, then anybody and everybody can get involved in Room to Read. You know, it doesn't take a billionaire to build a school. It just takes a group of coworkers who might raise $20,000, get their company to match, and voila, there's one more school in the world. So that's been a key part of our success. And then I think another key part of it has just been really opening ourselves up and encouraging everyone, you know, everywhere to get involved. I've always said I don't want to be the leader of an organization. I want to be one of many leaders of a global movement. So if you look, for example, in New England, we have a fabulous Boston chapter, hundreds of people involved. The leaders there, Barb and Wendy, are amazingly dedicated. They've both been off to Nepal. They've seen the poverty and wanted to do something about it. And I think education is always one of the best responses because education is a hand up, not a handout. So I don't really think of Room to Read as a charity or as an organization. I think of ourselves as a global movement. And I know that sounds a little bit grandiose, but I will, you know, in our defense, say that 7.5 million kids would agree with us because that's the number of children we've reached so far with new schools and libraries.
Well, I agree it could be seen as grandiose, but you do have to stop and say, okay, well, what are you doing right if in a collapsing economy you are able to see your budget grow and almost double and still be effective and still, when everyone is cutting back or almost everyone is cutting back on charitable giving, you are still able to survive. A collapsing economy, as you know, can certainly be the demise of an organization. How were you able to weather that storm?
I think some of it is what I call feet on the street. It's being out there constantly every day, making speeches, having lunches, going to dinners, doing book signings. I'm in Atlanta right now. We did a big event last night. I'll be on the West Coast next week. I'll be back up in New England in April or May. So for me, a lot of it is I spend a lot of time on the road, a lot of time traveling. I try to remind young charities that I mentor that, you know, when you run a charity, nobody shows up at your office and knocks on the door and says, "Hi, I'm here with a big check." You have to be out constantly telling your story. And I think for us, a lot of it is also just the fundraising chapters we have around the world, 57 cities now with over 10,000 volunteers who carry Room to Read business cards, but actually are not on our payroll. They're volunteers. They keep their day job, but they volunteer a small amount of time for Room to Read throwing events. And it may be a chapter in Calgary will say, okay, we're going to build a school in Nepal this year, so they'll raise $35,000. A chapter in New Hampshire might say, okay, we're going to build a school in Cambodia this year. And so everybody, it's kind of for us, we're not really a big top-down movement. We're not getting, you know, humongous grants from billionaires. It's just really normal, everyday citizens, one school at a time, one library at a time.
You started out wanting to build libraries. The mission has expanded to including building schools and funding scholarships for girls and publishing, as you mentioned. And I assume that comes out of necessity and the mission changes as you see the need grow.
It does. In the book, Creating Room to Read, the new book, I have a chapter. My favorite chapter that I wrote was called Searching for Seuss. And it was all about the need to find the equivalent of Dr. Seuss in the developing world. There really aren't many children's books published in the languages spoken by the poorest of the poor. Because when people are living on $1 a day or $2 a day, as you know, you and I both know 2 billion people live on less than $2 a day in the world today, they don't have money left over for books. So the for-profit publishers are not publishing many children's books in languages like Vietnamese, Khmer, Nepalese, Swahili, Zulu, Xhosa, Tamil, Sinhalese. The list I can keep going is depressingly long, the number of languages
right.
that don't have a vibrant children's book industry. So Room to Read stepped back and we said, well, if kids don't get literate in their mother tongue, what chance do they have to really get a complete education if they don't have that cornerstone or foundational issue of literacy? So we decided we would become a publisher. We decided we would go find the J.K. Rowling of Sri Lanka, that we would find the Dr. Seuss of Nepal, and work with them to produce original children's literature. I'm proud to say that, you know, kind of from little things, big things grow. We started with only 10 titles in Nepal in 2004. We now are at 850 original titles produced. We'll produce our 1,000th original title by the end of this year. And this is all done with local authors and local artists creating original content that's really relevant to the kids. And if people want to go to our website at roomtoread.org, they can see examples of this children's literature. So with nearly 1,000 titles, with nearly 12 million books now distributed, I often joke that Room to Read is the biggest children's publisher you've never heard of, because we're publishing in these fairly, you know, languages that are obscure to us, but to those kids who speak it at home, that language is what they really need to begin their reading journey on.
You write in the book about many schools in Asia and Africa being single-sex schools, and your program and that what you do in Room to Read and what you do within Room to Read schools is co-ed. How much of why was that important, number one? And two, for you, what was the main challenge in changing that very cultural aspect of the setup of the educational systems?
I've always thought that it's important for boys and girls to learn side by side in the developing world, because there's so much oppression of women and girls in many parts of the world today. And I think that a lot of it starts because the boys don't go to school next to the girls. They're not watching the girls achieve academically. They're not seeing them on the playground and interacting. And so it's a little bit depressingly easy for boys to be turned into sexists or misogynists if they actually don't go to school side by side with girls. And then if some evil force comes into their community and says girls are inferior, girls should be oppressed, the boys haven't really had an experience of actually interacting with the girls from a young age. And I think back to my own childhood. You know, I have an educated mother who read to me, an educated older sister and grandmother who both read to me. I went to school in a public school in a small town in Pennsylvania, and I watched the girls always excelling academically, quite often kicking my butt in some of the more difficult subjects. And so I'm just a product of being in an environment where there are always a lot of women, always women who are achieving, whether it be the kids, the girls in third grade, or whether it be the women I went to school with in graduate school, who proved every day that they were just as smart, and in many cases smarter than the men. So my hope is that, you know, tens of millions of kids in the developing world will have that same experience through Room to Read, and we'll have just a more peaceful and stable and harmonious world, because we shouldn't have any more stories like Malala, the girl from Pakistan. We shouldn't have any more stories like you see in Afghanistan and Bangladesh, where girls have acid thrown in their face. Like, I'm just like, that is just so barbarous. But a lot of it, I think, begins because boys just don't go to school next to girls. And that sounds, I know, a little bit simplistic, but sometimes the best solutions in life are actually fairly simplistic. We just have to implement them at scale.
And implementing them, what, and you write about this, obviously, the challenges that you run into in the individual towns and within the individual communities that you're working in. How do you overcome that?
We're very fortunate at Room to Read that from the very early days we decided we would not do a traditional model of sending well-meaning expats overseas to kind of drive around in Land Rovers and tell the local people what to do. We decided early on, Aaron and Dinesh, my co-founders, we decided, you know, it'll be strong Nepalese people in Nepal, strong Cambodians in Cambodia, strong South Africans in South Africa who will run Room to Read at the ground level. Obviously, they speak the local language, they're there on long-term contracts, not short-term, and they know how to get things done. One of the key things our local teams do is they work with communities under what we call a challenge grant model. And the idea behind the challenge grant model is that we don't actually build the school or the library for the local people, we build it with them. We work with the communities and ask them to co-invest. So if a school is getting built in rural Nepal, the parents might be out carrying sand from the river up the steep donkey path to their school's building site to be mixed into the cement. The parents might come out and saw logs or pound nails to build the bookshelves. I'm a big fan of the idea you cannot help people if they don't want to help themselves. And I think too much of foreign aid traditionally has treated the developing world like they are just passive aid recipients. What Room to Read does is we honor the local people by saying, we know that as parents you want your kids to get educated. Here's your chance to prove it and come out and roll up your sleeves and dig the foundation and prove that you have skin in the game. And that not only keeps costs down, but it also makes the program much more sustainable in the long run, because the local communities feel a strong sense of pride and a strong sense of ownership. And so when we go back and survey our schools and libraries, we find that 95% plus are still up and running years later because the local community really takes a lot of pride and ownership in each project.
The name of the book is Creating Room to Read, A Story of Hope in the Battle for Global Literacy. It is published by Viking. John Wood, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing, and best of luck in your wonderful efforts.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Have a great day ahead.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.